then all of a sudden they said, we agree with so much. And then all of a sudden that message and the enthusiasm spread through the internet. So without the internet, it could never have spread like it has.
Does the current National Republican Party work for you? Does it share your values?
Well, in theory they do, and even the platforms, you know, over the years has always been pretty good, and President Bush ran on the same foreign policy that I'm running on, you know, no nation building and no policing of the world, and a humble foreign policy, but they know I believe it and I would do it. And they've always been fiscal conservatives. They've always talked about individual freedom and free markets and low taxes. But they didn't do that. Government got bigger. The deficits got worse. We didn't have a humble foreign policy. And that's why they're disgruntled. So I think I appeal to the Republican base. It's sort of the old conservative Republican base who used to believe in this. And so many have been conned into believing neoconservatism represents Republican Party. But that's also the reason I think Republicans lost last year, is the neoconservatives aren't truly conservatives.
My guest is Congressman Ron Paul of Texas, Republican candidate for president. This weekend, this fundraising event that's happening on the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, I understand that you have decided not to attend in order to keep the finances separate legally. Is that true?
Yeah, I don't see, you know, it's sort of sad that if somebody has a little fundraiser for you and they organize that the candidate couldn't just stop by. I don't see how that possibly could be breaking the law. But on second thought, you know, why aggravate the situation? You know, the idea of the Feingold-McCain approach to regulating every penny that we spend is such a violation of the concept of people's rights and freedoms and how they spend their money. But weighing everything, I decided not to go there. Scheduling was part of it, but I think it's tragic to think that we should even have to think about that.
Do you like the idea of tying event to the Boston Tea Party? Is that a symbol you like?
Oh, I think so. I mean, our founders were pretty annoyed with big government and the king and all the authoritarianism that was going on there. I think it's amazing the American people have put up with what they have. I'm sure the abuse by our federal government is a lot worse than the King of England ever put on us. I mean, our government now invades our homes. They can search our houses, and we're not even allowed to tell anybody unless we commit another crime. If we tell somebody, oh, the federal government was in here searching my house. So it's pretty bad. I mean, back then they actually had the right of habeas corpus under the king. Today, habeas corpus is essentially gone. So we're in a mess. So the comparison is legitimate. I just think that we emphasize, you know, nonviolence, and that if people practice civil disobedience, they have to accept the consequence. But people are very annoyed and very frustrated. But to tie what we're doing and what our campaign has been doing to the spirit of our revolution, I think is very, very good. They want more freedom and less government.
You've talked about dramatically decreasing the size of the federal government, eliminating departments like education, energy, agriculture, commerce, HHS. What would an ideal federal government look like to you? What would the scope of its power be?
Well, of course, if you went ideally overall, which is not achievable, and you'd have to just work to that, I mean, you'd have a very, very small federal government. You would have our troops at home. We would be spending less. We wouldn't have an income tax. We would have hard money, solid money, where governments couldn't print money out of thin air and create all this inflation and cause the business cycle and financial bubbles to form. We would be so much more prosperous. We would be having a 100% chance, better chance of having peace, and there'd be not personal freedom and prosperity would be so much improved, but government would be very small. It would be there to protect contracts, not to interfere with contracts like the government does. It would protect the value of money. It would protect private property. It wouldn't be using eminent domain to take the property from the people. It would be, quite different. We would not have the government becoming the nanny state and telling us what we can put in our mouths, whether you're allowed to drink raw milk or not. I mean, that's how far it's gone, whether you're dying of cancer, whether you can smoke marijuana. We wouldn't have this nanny state attitude where you can't even trust ourselves or other sources. We have to always go to the federal government to ask permission to do whatever we want.
And even for that limited amount of government, how would you pay for it without an income tax?
Well, you know, if we didn't have the income tax today, you would still have the same amount of money you had 10 years ago. And the size of government wasn't all that bad 10 years ago from the perspective of those who like government. It was still, for me, way too big. It wasn't like you could take away, you know, all the income. If government, if we didn't have the income tax and we had the same revenues that we had in year 2000, I would still have to cut taxes. Up until 1970,
we talked a little bit earlier about this phenomenon of freedom to support you in any way they choose. Groups, hate groups, anti-Semitic groups. What do you make of that phenomenon?
Well, I don't know much about it. I haven't heard much about it. I have no contact with them. I don't endorse other people's beliefs when they're ugly beliefs. But, you know, when you protect freedom, you do protect freedom of choice, which means that, you know, people may read and look at certain pictures that may be very ugly and pornographic, but I don't think the government is there to protect us against those kind of elements. Just as in religion, there's some really bizarre beliefs in religion, and I don't endorse them, but I endorse the concept of freedom. But people come together, so we end up, people who love to gamble, they support me, but people who love homeschooling, who want to be protected, different uses of freedom, they bring these people together. So it's a coming together on the issue of freedom, not coming together to agree on social values. And that's the difference from those who want to impose social values through force. And that's where the antagonism and the fight. Not only do they impose social values that say somebody is for abortion, then they say somebody is for abortion to pay for the abortions. That's looking for a fight. And then they say somebody is for abortion to pay for the abortions. It's not a perfect world. There's will still be, you know, people with doing things that are unethical and not virtuous. But it wouldn't be the government that would be sorting that out. The individual would have to do it, and the family and the churches would have to sort out those things that are called virtuous.
Is there a benefit to going through this process of running for president if you don't become president? Is there something you can achieve on the trail?
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope all efforts that anybody does are worthwhile. I think people who live and die becoming president and say whatever they have to, they lose a lot. But if we can win with sticking to principle, then it's worth something. And if you come in second and third and you've stuck to principle and you've influenced people, it's still worth something. But the people who sacrifice so much of their principles, they lose a lot. They lose their principles. Then if they lose the election, what do they have left?
Do you think you are influencing the tone of the debate among your competitors for the nomination? Do you think what they're talking about and how they're talking about it is different because you're in the race?
To some degree, they're starting to use my language every once in a while. Well, we do need diplomacy. We can't ignore diplomacy. Or they'll talk about the Constitution, but for so many others listening to them, they're not quite believable because their history shows that they were very careless about interpreting the Constitution.
You have said that if you don't win the nomination, you won't accept a third-party bid. Why not?
Well, the system is biased against anybody against outside of the major parties. You can't get into debates. You spend all your money trying to get on ballots. So we don't have a fair democratic process here. It's very biased toward the two parties, and the two parties, when it comes to foreign policy, economic policy, and monetary policy, it's very, very similar. There's really no change. You put the Republicans in, they do the same thing as the Democrats. The Democrats were elected last fall and did nothing that the mandate asked for, and that is to stop the war, and nothing has happened. So it means there's a lot of people been disenfranchised, and I think that's the group of people we've tapped into, and they come from all ranks and files and beliefs and economic background, and we bring a lot of those people together. And the Republican base and the Democratic base is really very small when you think about it.
Representative Ron Paul, talking with our own Rebecca Roberts yesterday. I want to play that for you. He was also obviously at the debate yesterday in Iowa.
Now to try to boost the Republican candidate, a giant blimp nearly 200 feet long. Let's turn to our internet reporter, Ed. Plan now to try to boost the Republican candidate, a giant blimp nearly 200 feet. He's watching this story for us. All right, tell us about this blimp, Abby.
Wolf, it's a Goodyear-sized blimp. Here it is getting prepped in North Carolina. The plan from the grassroots supporters of Ron Paul to plaster the thing with ads, look, this kind of thing, Google Ron Paul, and then fly it up the East Coast next week to Boston to promote an online fundraising drive, which they're planning around the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. They've been raising money online to hire the blimp. The president of the company that owns the blimp confirms he's been talking to them and the plan is underway, though he warns that a Monday launch could be a little bit unrealistic and that winter weather could corrupt any plan that might be going ahead. Still, the supporters of Ron Paul that are behind this raising money online, a spokesman for the effort says they've got $200,000 so far to get it off the air, up in the air, and that if they get even more money to come in, that they could fly it over New Hampshire for the primary. If it all sounds far-fetched, well, these are the same online supporters that last month promised a massive one-day fundraising haul online, and then they pulled it off. So we should probably be watching. Wolf.
Abby, thanks for that. Can the power of Oprah turn into votes?
And we're in the midst of a currency crisis. Our dollar is going down rapidly as we speak. It's because we have lived beyond our means. We can't afford the foreign. We're in the midst of a currency crisis. Our dollar is going down rapidly as we speak. It's because we're in the midst of a currency crisis. Our dollar is going down rapidly as we speak. It's because we have lived beyond our means. We can't afford the foreign policy that we have. We have to cut back. We have to live it within our means. If we're going to spend money, we ought to spend it at home, and that is why we have to change this foreign policy. We can't afford it. to do what we're doing today because it will destroy our dollar.
Thank you. Congressman Paul, what sacrifices would you ask Americans to make for debt reduction?
I think it's absolutely unnecessary to sacrifice. We want to give people more freedom, more chance to spend their own money. It's unnecessary. We can cut by looking at our foreign policy. We maintain an empire which we can't afford. We have 700 bases overseas. We are in 130 countries. We cut there. And then we have a better defense of this country, and the people get that money, and they get to spend it here at home. There's no need to sacrifice. We need more liberty, more rights for the people to spend their own money. And in this, in that situation, there is no sacrifice and no need for it. The most sinister of all taxes is the inflation tax, and it is the most regressive. It hits the poor and the middle class. When you destroy a currency by creating money out of thin air to pay the bills, the value of the dollar goes down, and people get hit with a higher cost of living. It's the middle class that's being wiped out. It is the most evil of all taxes.
These questions, and we're going to start with Congressman Paul. One in five jobs in Iowa depends on exports to foreign countries. But we're also exporting a lot of high-wage manufacturing jobs. What's your plan for keeping foreign markets open while protecting good-paying American jobs?
Well, we need to adopt free trade agreements with other countries. Today, we inhibit the export of, say, farm products to countries like Cuba. It's time we change our attitude about Cuba. We should be looking to open these markets. But our markets get closed for monetary reasons because our chief export is our dollar, because we have the reserve currency of the world. People take these dollars and our jobs go overseas. You can't solve any of these problems if you don't look at the monetary system and how it contributes to these job losses in order to provide the prosperity for our people here at home.
Governor Romney, would you answer first, and then Senator Thompson?
The goal of all political action should be to preserve liberty. We need more freedom in this country. We need to look to ourselves and what we are doing. We have drifted so far from our Constitution that the government, that the Constitution was written to restrain our government. Yet we've turned around, and the Constitution now is used to restrain the people. But we have no chance if we don't restrain the government, all that they do in undermining our personal liberties, controlling our economic well-being, and using it as an excuse to police the world. If we don't change the role for government, this country is going to suffer a very, very serious economic crisis.
Senator, education in the United States. And how would you address it?
Probably the federal government. We've been involved at the federal level for over 50 years. We've had a Department of Education. It used to be the policy of the Republican Party to get rid of the Department of Education. We finally get in charge and a chance to do something, so we doubled the size of the Department of Education, and we have no child left behind. The teachers don't like it. The students don't like it, and the quality of education hasn't gone up. The cost of education has gone up. So we need to look to our local resources. We need to release the creative energy of the teachers at the local level, but what we can do immediately is to give tax credits. I have a bill that would give tax credits to the teachers to raise their salaries. At the same time, we should encourage homeschooling and private schooling and let the individuals write that off. The parents have to get control of the education. It used to be parents had control of education through local school boards. Today, it's the judicial system and the executive branch of government, the bureaucracy that controls things. And it would be predictable that the quality would go down. The money goes to the bureaucrats and not to this educational system at home.
Thank you. Senator Thompson, that's a tall order for a year. Congressman Paul, what about you?
Well, there's a limit what you can do in 1 year, and at home it's more difficult. You would have to work with the Congress, but the commander-in-chief could end the war. We could bring our troops home. That would be a major event. It would be very valuable. We could be become diplomatically credible once again around the world. Right now, today, we're not. Even our allies resent what we do. We would have no more preemptive war. We would threaten nobody. We would not threaten Iran. Now it is proven once again, Iraq didn't have the nuclear weapon, had nothing to do with 9/11. The Iranians have no nuclear weapon, according to our CIA. There's no need for us to threaten the Iranians. We could immediately turn the Navy around and bring them home, and I think this would be a major step toward peace.
Thank you, Congressman.
The Internet is delightful. It is just delightful for finding the information. And if there's a question that I need ask, you can find it. So I spend a lot of time getting information that was at one time in my life was very difficult to find. There should be no excuse in this country anymore for not finding correct answers and analyzing the problems that we face, because the correct answers are out there and judgments should be made to the best of one's ability.
So this next set, Congressman Paul, you call your campaign a revolution, and I think it's safe to say that your brand of change is one of the most sweeping proposed by any candidate of either party, but getting your agenda through Congress would likely require a revolution of an entirely different sort. So how would you adjust your plan in light of political reality in Washington?
Well, the secret is the term revolution wasn't my word, and it didn't come up on our webpage. It was coined by the supporters. But in a way, it is revolutionary to go back to the Constitution. And we'd like to continue the old revolution. And believe me, freedom is unifying. We bring a lot of people together. People then are free to choose what they would like to do with their lives, free to choose how they would spend their money. And all of a sudden, we would be telling other countries how to live.
So
this brings
Congress.
People together. And I think it's appealing to both left and right and middle. And our campaign really has that appeal. So therefore, we would bring the Congress together.
Okay, thank you.
Advice would be to reread the oath of office, take it seriously, obey the Constitution. We are well defended against all enemies foreign. We should be much more careful about defending against the enemies domestic.
Congressman Hunter?
Everybody gets up early. get busy and work hard.
Probably not as early as you, though.
But I needed it.
Those who know him call him Dr. Paul. He spent decades in the medical field delivering more than 4,000 babies in Texas before getting...
But I needed it.
Those who know him call him Dr. Paul. He spent decades...
But I needed it.
Those who know him call him Dr. Paul. He spent decades in the medical field delivering more than 4,000 babies in Texas before getting active in politics.
What's been the most challenging issue for you and your family since you've been trying to run for president? They say a lot of bad things about you, some good things about you and your family.
Yeah, that is. I think the schedule is very challenging, and I'm such a complainer, you know. Why am I doing this? I mean, not too many weeks ago, we had a rally up here. Matter of fact, the park over there, we had 800 people, volunteers come. And it was a family event, and I think we had 30 members of our family. We have 5 children and 18 grandchildren and spouses and all, so I was very amazed how many showed up, because I didn't organize it. My middle son, who's an ophthalmologist in Kentucky, he organized it. He says, get the family up there. And usually the other night when we were in Florida for the debate, 2 of my grandchildren were there with me, and my wife will go on about half of the trips. But it's not easy, because I really like to go home.
On a personal note, just looking at grad schools right now, sort of in different areas of the country, and one of them is Texas, and I was wondering if you can give me any insight into like the type of person a Texan is and what the kind of environment I could expect would be.
Well, do you have your boots on yet? I think Texas, I think some of that image stuff is a bit concocted at times. I think Texas is like every place else. You know, and to me, I think they have a spirit of independence and liberty, and yet if you go to our state house in Texas, we have some of the same problems that many other states face up to. So there's a lot to be said that human nature is human nature.
So what was your defining moment that made you say, I think I should be the President of the United States?
Well, for me, it's a little bit different, because I approached it differently, because I never had that. Say, oh, this is what I want to do. Because in many ways, most people want to be president because they are they believe the president's job is to run your life, run the economy, and run the world. And mine is so different. Mine is actually opposite. I don't want to run your life. I want your life to be your own, and you assume responsibility for it.
Ron Paul is the only major Republican candidate who opposes the war in Iraq. He promises to bring U.S. troops home immediately.
I'd like to know where you get the courage to stand and speak your views that are very different from your party.
I think it comes from having studied a long time and always worked to try to come up with the right conclusion, then I could defend those positions. So I guess it comes from a lot of things, you know, whether it's independence, or you have to have confidence to be a doctor. You know, you have to know how to take care of an emergency, and even though fortunately in delivering babies, most of the work is done by the mother.
Paul says medical school was a formulative time for him. The abortion debate was in its early days, and that had an impact, and so did a care package from home.
In 1957 was an interesting year because I think that year it was my mother sent me a book. She was well-read, although not college-educated. She sent me the book that came out that year was Dr. Zhivago. And I read that, and it really had a bit of an impact to me, knowing what, you know, communism did and how destructive it was. And my wife worked my way through medical school because she was a dance teacher, and she could watch our kids and teach dancing in our home.
The Cuban Missile Crisis interrupted medical school. Ron Paul was drafted. He served in the Air National Guard for 5 years.
So you said you were a flight surgeon in the Air Force?
I was a flight medic. So what
was that, right?
So what are some of your, like, best assignments?
That's right.
Assignments.
Well, I know. My immediate answer, I can remember the worst ones. The worst assignment was when you were the investigator of accidents. You know, the flight surgeon.
Right.
You know, a plane goes down. I had about three of those. And they're, of course, terrible when you try to figure out who messed up. Was it a mechanic or a pilot air or what?
Ron Paul also remembers meeting President Kennedy in Texas on November 21st, 1963, the day before the world changed.
And, of course, we thought it was an exciting event, not realizing what was in store for us within 24 hours, because he left there and went to Dallas.
Over time, Ron Paul's interest in politics turned to activism. He ran for Congress in 1976 and won.
That I only have a picture of one politician in my office is Grover Cleveland. And the quote under the picture is, "What is it worth winning an election or getting reelected if you don't stand for something?"
What's your take on religion as part of the process for the campaign process?
I think it's very important, but in a nondescript manner.
But over time, Paul grew tired of Washington and for a brief period stepped out of the spotlight.
So I was in Congress from 76 to 84, and then I wanted to go back to my medical practice. I do OBGYN, delivered a lot of babies, and I missed it and really didn't want to be a professional at this game of politics. So I went back to OBGYN.
Frustration with decisions in Washington drew him back. He ran for president in 1988 as a libertarian and later returned to Congress.
So what do you think is more difficult? Politics or delivering babies?
Well, I guess with risk, I say delivering babies is a lot more fun. At least you ended up with something new and precious. And it was exciting. Even though this was old-fashioned, back in the old days when we delivered, there weren't so much the husbands and the family participating. Now it's a big family event. But it was, like I say, this was old-fashioned, but it was sort of exciting. You delivered the baby, and there were no ultrasounds, and nobody knew, and you'd walk out and talk to the husband, and you'd say, "You have a..."
How many grandkids do you have?
We have 18 grandchildren and one great-grandchild.
And one great-grandchild? Right. Can you name them all?
You know, I might have to stop and think. You know, I might have to stop and think. Yes, I can and do that. But I always brag when I'm introducing my wife. I said, "Yeah, I can. We have 18 grandchildren, and I can name them all." I said, "But my wife knows all their birthdays every 4 years."
Yeah.
She said, "No way, buddy." So she. She had every 4 years.
Yeah.
No, what, every 4 years.
Yeah.
No, what, she said, "No way, buddy." So she had a birthday party on her 16th birthday, and for some reason she was determined to get me to that birthday party, and I believe it or not, I was very shy. So she asked me, and it might have been really one of my first dates too.
If you had one free day where you couldn't campaign and you couldn't deliver any babies, what would you do with the free day?
That would be that'd be tough. You know what I would like to do? I love riding bicycles. I love to be outdoors. And that is always my biggest complaint, that when I'm real busy on the campaign trail, because I had a bit of a ritual walking and riding bikes a lot.
You come across a genie in your bottle. What are your three wishes?
A lot more peace in the world. A lot more freedom in the world. And then we would have a lot more prosperity.
The Constitution, he says, the federal government has no business doing it. He even votes against laws that would give money to his constituents. The Constitution, he says, the federal government has no business doing it. He even votes against... Your district is subject to floods, but you vote against FEMA. Why?
Because I think FEMA helps create the flood problems. You know, if it's risky on the Gulf Coast to build there, the insurance prices will go up. Then you can either build there or pay high fees. But if it's too high, nobody will build there. Or they'll build there with full risk of flood comes, or the wind blows your house away, you don't get reimbursed. So there might be modest building in those areas. But if the government subsidizes the insurance, say, oh, if you build there, don't sweat it. We're going to bail you out. So all of a sudden, more people move into the flood-prone areas. And then who are the people that have to bail you out? Somebody that lives out in the desert someplace. So it's unfair. It's not good economics. You create more problems. More houses get flooded. And it becomes a general problem rather than an individual problem. And what we have undermined there is the principle of measuring risk. And then people do things that they wouldn't have otherwise done.
Like move to the edge of the ocean.
That is right.
You also say no farm subsidies. None.
No, I can't quite find it in the Constitution that said, you know, the farm subsidies program is authorized by Article 1, Section 8. It's not there.
But economically, don't we need farm subsidies to make sure we have food?
I think it is totally unnecessary. I think we might push the prices of food up and maybe makes it more difficult for poor people to buy food. Because if there's a subsidy, it means the taxpayer was taxed to pay the subsidy to the so-called family farmer, which usually doesn't get the money. It usually goes to a huge corporate farmer. So the taxpayer pays one time. Then when you go to the store, you pay higher prices for your food. So it hasn't helped the people. And why should we assume that the farmers wouldn't be productive? They're hardworking people. And I never voted for farm subsidies, and I represented the farm district. And the farmers voted for
that?
They voted for me, but the farm organizations don't. Farm district, and don't particularly send money to me either. The doctors will. The farmers will support me, but not the organizations. When you have these organizations, whether they're farm organizations or medical organizations, they seem to get too close to government, and they sort of, whether they're farm organizations or medical organizations, they seem of these organizations.
And most crops don't have subsidies. We have plenty of peaches and plums.
That's right. All of these organizations. And sometimes when I go to the grocery store, I always marvel, isn't it wonderful how we can go and see so much fresh produce there? And the prices aren't regulated for these other things. It was a fallacious argument back in the 30s that the Depression came from free markets, and therefore we had to protect everybody, and we had to have a safety net for everybody, and we had a safety net for the farmers, and we gave up on believing in freedom and understanding how the market works.
You talk about freedom and tyranny. I seldom hear politicians use those words.
That's right. I think those are our only two choices, and we've had a grand experiment in this country where we emphasize freedom. If you read the Constitution was designed to protect individual liberty, to restrain the government. But we have forgotten that. Now we have an interpretation which means that we spy on the American people, encroach on their privacy, take care of them, run the nanny state, and then we have secrecy in government. So we have it now reversed. People say, well,
they'll criticize me and say, "Oh, Ron, you want to go back to the Dark Ages? You know, back to the Dark Ages of the strict interpretation of the Constitution." Well, I want to go back to the Constitution, but I don't consider it the Dark Ages. I think the Dark Ages were the days when all you had was tyranny. So freedom is new, tyranny is old, it's ancient.
Well, here it is. This isn't the Dark Ages. This is the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
It's ancient.
Well, here it is. This isn't the Dark Ages. This is the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. We don't need 55,000 pages of tax code alone.
It is not complex. The more complex it is, it is not complex. The more complex it is, the more leery. It is not complex. The more complex it is, the more leery we ought to be of what they're doing. Before we vote, you can read the Constitution, you understand it, but you cannot read and understand hardly any of the legislation being passed.
And
greater number of people than I ever dreamed that still remember the Constitution, and they were waiting for somebody to speak in defense of the Constitution. But the other greater number of people than I ever dreamed that still remember the Constitution, and they were waiting for somebody to speak. And the miraculous thing is happening. The young people are responding, and they come in. And when I ask them, why do you join the campaign? And they'll say, we love your position on the Constitution. We love your position on freedom. These are young people who understand. It's not like they don't understand what they're inheriting. They know something about Social Security, and they know something about intrusion of personal liberties and personal choices. That, to me, is a lot of fun.
They want to be left alone.
That is it, and that's what freedom is all about, trusting that individuals can make better choices than government can make for us.
It joins us to explain. Denise?
Mark, compared to this summer, Ron Paul says he's feeling much more optimistic about his standing in the race for the Republican.
It joins us to explain. Denise?
Mark, compared to this summer, Ron Paul says he's feeling much more optimistic.
It joins us to explain. Denise?
Mark, compared to this summer, Ron Paul says he's feeling much more optimistic about his standing in the race for the Republican nomination. And today he told a Sioux City crowd he hasn't hit his peak just yet.
Let's go, Bill. Let's go to bus.
Bill Stegmaier hops on the South Dakota for Ron Paul Mobile, a bandwagon that's logged close to 7,000 miles.
Kind of like following him around as best I can. I've been to Texas for the Texas straw poll, and I've been to Des Moines and Iowa several times.
Well, how about that Huckabee takeover in Iowa?
And inside are just a couple of guys looking for someone to believe in.
I'm American, so I'm voting for Ron Paul.
Guys who haven't found it in the typical front runners.
He supports the average working man, and that's what I am, a work for a living.
In countries like this.
And Ron Paul says they're the reason he's making a surge this late in the game.
Really striking a chord with a lot of people, a lot of young people especially, have joined the campaign, and it's reflecting in the fundraising. Our fundraising actually gets easier and easier for us.
A humble take on politics in a campaign of celebrities and endorsements.
I know I don't want to be last. And we strive to go to the top. And that's about all I can say. You know, I think we'll do well. I think, you know, for a long time we've been written off. You know, we'd win all these polls after the debate. Oh, yeah, it's just a couple of his friends, you know, out there that knows how to use the Internet.
When in reality, it's a couple of friends and the Ron Paul Mobile. Now, Ron Paul was actually the Libertarian candidate in the 1988 presidential election. Well, now the party wants him back in their corner. Now, Ron Paul says while their offer is flattering, he has no intention of going back to the independents. Michelle?
I wanted to get this out right away. I wanted to get this out right away. 2 weeks ago, maybe? Mark said no. Well, I made the video, put it into your hands, and asked you to forward it to Dr. Paul. Happening Tuesday, December, what is it? I know it's next Tuesday, 18th. So Tuesday, December 18th happening Tuesday, December, what is it? I know it's next Tuesday, 18th. So Tuesday, December 18th, Eastern Time, on Headline Prime. His views, I mean, if you watch my show or you know anything about me, you may not agree with all my policies, but I'm pretty libertarian in many ways. His views need more than 30-second sound bites to answer. I am going to try to cover an awful lot of ground with him, but I'm going to give him a full hour to explain his views and answer honest questions. That's Ron Paul, 7 o'clock Eastern, Tuesday on Headline Prime. We'll see you there.
Through this message, because I want to take time out from my campaign so my family and I can wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. Through this message, because I want to take time out from my campaign so my family and I can wish you a happy holiday season and an absolutely great 2008.
Holy ancient Yuletide carol, la 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 la.
Well, I am not a politician. I'm a doctor. But lately, I am not a politician. I'm a doctor. But lately, I've been going around and doing a few political speeches. And I was pretty nervous the first couple times I did it, but my dad said, just go have fun. That's what he told me. So I'm going to try to have a little fun and not keep y'all too long. Heck, they've said everything anyways. I don't have anything else to say. So I'll probably start with just some stuff about the family. Let's talk about the family a little bit. My brother Ronnie was the first brother to get married. When he got married, he had a lot of friends. He had two great brothers. He had brother-in-laws. But the person who was asked to be the best man was Ron Paul. My brother Rand got married next. Now, Rand is a doctor in Kentucky. He's probably the smartest Paul I know. He is very, very sharp. He had friends from high school, college, medical school, two great brothers. By that time, he had some great brother-in-laws. But the best man was Ron Paul. Well, then came me. It was my turn to get married. I got married 1 week after I graduated from medical school. I had two great brother-in-laws, I had two great brothers, I had tons of friends, but without a question, there is no doubt in my mind, the best man is Ron Paul. Now, there's been a lot of Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater was the modern conservative movement. He was the Barry Goldwater was the modern conservative movement. He was the one that started it. He is a true Republican. His son, Barry Goldwater Jr., served with my father. Barry Goldwater Jr., without question, is a true Republican. Barry Goldwater Jr. supports Ron Paul. True Republicans are supposed to be for lower taxes. Ron Paul is the taxpayer's best friend. Come on. True Republicans are supposed to balance the budget, reduce the size of government. Ron Paul has never voted for an unbalanced budget, and he will have his veto pen going up in Washington. Now, the Republicans, they really claim that you've got to be really, really moral to be a Republican. Ron Paul is a Christian who has been married for 50 years and believes that we need to protect the rights of the unborn. That's very moral. To be a true Republican, you have to be strong on defense. Ron Paul has always been strong on defense. They mentioned twice today that he has gotten more money from any of the military and any of the military families. They know what's important about defense. You have to stand up and you have to swear to uphold the Constitution. Ron Paul did that when he was in the military. Ron Paul has done that as a congressman. And Ron Paul will continue to do that as President of the United States. So I disagree with all the media telling us that Ron Paul's not a true Republican. We have Democrats and independents that are supporting Ron Paul. They've never voted for a Republican because they've never had a true Republican to vote for. They do now. I'm not going to be long-winded. I'm going to make this short. I want you to know the campaign is doing great, but we have a lot of work to do still. We can't stop now. The way to win this thing is not worrying about what the media says. It is not going to be, they are not going to help us any at all. We have to do it. It's the people that have to do it. Ron Paul is going to be the first president elected by the people, probably since Andrew Jackson. The people are going to do this. I'm from Fort Worth, Texas, and we've got some Fort Worth people here. I tell the meetup group there all the time, and they can vouch for me. It's the meetup groups that are going to win this. We can do this. We have to do it from the bottom up. We're not going to go to the media and work down. We're going to start with the people, and it's one person at a time. You have to get out. You have to talk to the people. You have to talk to your friends, to your neighbors, people you don't know on the street. Wear your shirts, wear your buttons, wear your sweatshirts, everything. That's the only way to do this, and it can be done, and we are doing it, but we've got to continue the fight. My dad has been doing this for 30 years. My dad is totally amazed by the fact that now we have people that are ready for this message. The message is important. It's freedom. It's liberty. It's the Constitution. It is what our republic is all about. It is definitely worth fighting for. If we don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. The media is not going to help us. I've said that several times, but it's the truth. They're not going to help us. We can do this. We can win. And after we win in New Hampshire, we are going to steamroll over the rest of the states. Thank y'all very much.
Me why we did that. And people say it's not going to change anything, you know, that campaign. Why are you doing that? And my response to that is simple. I say, when does a dam burst? Is it the final drop that actually bursts the dam? Or is it all the thousands and millions of small little drops that contributed to the fact that the dam was finally bursting? It's self-evident. All those single drops are just as important to making the dam burst. And I think we're on to something. I believe that this Ron Paul campaign has made a fundamental difference. It is something bigger even than the presidential campaign as such. It is something that will live on regardless of how this presidential campaign goes. I believe this Ron Paul campaign has sparked something in people, in the masses, in the people that have been suppressed by the power establishment for so long. People are sick and tired of the power establishment helping themselves. And this hypocrite, Al Gore, is part of that establishment. How convenient for him to get the Nobel Peace Prize just before the next election in the U.S. And by next week, you'll see him holding hands with Hillary Clinton. The Nobel Peace Prize in Norway has become a mockery. They made a mockery out of it. And especially if Hillary wins next year, that will be the final proof. So we thought it was important to tell all the media outlets that were in Oslo that we're watching them. We know what they're up to. We know how the established order tries to reinforce its own power, how they work with each other, trying to find causes to gather around to make sure that they keep the power. We did that so that the media and the power people would see that there is a grassroots movement that looks beyond what they're doing. We see what they're doing and we don't like it. So what we did was to add a couple of drops, and finally the dam will burst. This is a long-term struggle and a long-term fight. We, the movement, the Ron Paul movement, we're going to keep pounding. We're going to keep pounding, 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 pounding. And eventually, the dam will burst. The truth will come out. The truth the founding fathers fought for. The truth they risked their life for. The American Constitution, the gold standard, minimum government, a government that keeps to its own business, low taxes, all that is going to come out eventually. So we did our part. We added a few drops. And that's what all of you are doing out there. And that's what I want you to continue doing. Add drops and eventually the dam will burst. Good luck out there.
One second, hold it. You better